contending for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. This is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon.
Thanks for tuning in to another week of Abounding Grace Radio. I'm Pastor Chris Gordon, and as always, we are so thankful to our radio listeners for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. You can find all of these podcasts there on the website at agradio.org. Free for download. Everything's free. We put that all up there for you. Maps to churches in your areas. A way to connect with us there on Facebook. There's so many resources there for you. We really do ask you to go to the website and explore who we are and what we believe. And if these radio broadcasts are a blessing to you, we encourage your prayerful and financial support. It helps us to continue to bring the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ and his wonderful forgiveness of sins to broken sinners' lives. That's our goal at Abounding Grace Radio, and we hope it's a blessing to you. Today on Abounding Grace, we really do come to a sort of climax, glorious passage of Exodus 14, where the Lord tells Israel, stop panicking, stop fighting me, I'll fight this battle for you. Don't you need to hear that, dear listener, that the Lord is the one who can fight for you and win? We can't really fight in this life. We can't save ourselves. We don't have the power. We're helpless before the enemy. He's coming at us from all angles. And the Lord says today, stand still. I'll fight for you. You come to Christ, believe his gospel, stand firm in his promises. I will take care of the battle for you. What a glorious message we'll look at today on Abounding Grace Radio. Thanks again for tuning in to Abounding Grace Radio. Here is that message now from Exodus, the end of chapter 13 and 14, which I have titled, The Battle Belongs to the Lord. Thanks for tuning in to Abounding Grace Radio. The Lord had just told Israel to celebrate and to practice the Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and the Law of the Firstborn when they entered into the land. In the midst of it, I don't know if you caught it, but in the midst of it, the Lord said numerous times, the ones that I'm thinking about are in verse 5, when the Lord brings you into the land. Verse 11, he says it again. When the Lord brings you into the land, crucial emphasis here, as he swore. To which you say, when did he swear? We'll come back to that. He is presenting this as if it is as good as done. He is going to bring them into the land. And as soon as he had instructed them, we open up the first scene. We begin the wilderness journey, and the whole thing seems to fall apart. I mean, it really seems to fall apart. They turn around and look behind them, and there come the Egyptians marching after them. What were they to do? They can't fight them. This was something Israel did not yet understand. They were setting off on this journey home, and the Lord wanted something. The Lord was now teaching them something. He had been working all of his splendor and power and might in front of them. But what did he want from them? Well, it shines today that the Lord is calling them. What shines is he is calling them to trust. The scene is a call to faith. The scene is a call to believe his promises. Now as they're heading out, and they're being tested right out of the gates with that. First scene, first act. And as the Lord tests them, the Lord wanted them to understand he's doing this for his own glory. He can't renege on that. That his name is at stake in this. And he wants them to believe that the entirety of their deliverance all the way through from beginning to end is his work. It's his battle. It's his fight. It's his salvation. Salvation belongs to the Lord. He is that committed He wanted them to stand back and say, whoa, the Lord is that committed to complete this work. Nothing can take that. He is that committed to bring you home. And we see that today as we open up this glorious section of Exodus chapter 13. I said to, I don't know how many people, this is the most exciting passage in Exodus. And everyone said, Pastor, stop saying that. You say that all the time. But it's true. Somebody once asked, what's your favorite passage? The one I'm preaching that week. This one is awesome. And the Lord is showing his power to deliver them by demonstrating his presence with them, his purpose to fulfill what he swore, and that his promise to fight for them the whole way through. Presence, the purpose, and the promise to fight. He has put his name on the line. How could he not do what he said? Let's begin with this encouraging presence of the Lord that the text now emphasizes. Remember back in chapter 3, as the Lord was commissioning and sending Moses over to Egypt to deliver his people, there was that glorious burning bush event. You remember what had happened. Moses had looked at this little desert shrub, and the thing would not be consumed. Fire was in the midst of the bush, and it did not consume the bush. And there we learned that the angel, who is Yahweh, was in the bush. He had appeared to the Lord, to Moses. And there he made a promise to Moses. And all of Moses' struggle and doubt and fear and anxiety, the Lord said, I will certainly, Moses, be with you. And we've heard that so much, but what does that look like? What does that look like? Well, even after the golden calf event, the Lord would come again and Moses would intercede and would plea, and the Lord would again reassure them that he would be with them. He said that in Exodus 33. My presence will go with you. The threat had been for the presence to be removed. And he said, and I will give you rest. I'm going to do it. Moses understood. He said in Exodus 33 that without your presence, don't even lead us out. We can't handle this for a moment. We can't fight this battle for a moment. It was a distressing thought. Well, as we open up chapter 13, we're seeing the Lord make good again and again, as we've always seen throughout already our study in Genesis and now in Exodus, making good on his word, and he is leading them. His presence is going with them. That's the emphasis here as we open up the first section of Genesis chapter 13. And you'll notice there in verse 17 of chapter 13 that a few things are emphasized. First, about his leading. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. But God led the people around by the way of the wilderness toward the Red Sea. The people had gone up from Egypt. It'll help to remember that whatever insight you're getting here about the leading, they didn't get. The Lord was leading them. They were called to trust. But future generations were to read this and see and learn certain things about the Lord's leading of them so that we would remember these things. And as 2 Timothy says, it's profitable for us. He's leading them. But he wants us to see something. The Spirit wanted us to see something. We're told that the Lord did not take, this is a huge principle in Scripture, according to our wisdom, he did not take the most expedient and the quickest route. Didn't do it. The most efficient way, the best way, would have been to head north along what we know as the Via Maris, meaning the way of the sea. In fact, it's been observed that had Israel gone that way, it would probably take in a few weeks instead of 40 years to get there. What's God doing? What is he doing? There's an interesting phrase. At the end of verse 18, I never caught it before. And the people of Israel went up out of the land of Egypt
equipped for battle, ready to fight. Word means they have lined up in ranks. I had to stop and ponder that for a moment. I mean, that's an interesting phrase because they went in ranks, they lined up for war. They're not warriors. They have never fought a battle in their life. They had a lot of weapons handed to them by the Egyptians, didn't they, when they plundered? They had a lot of swords all of a sudden in their hand. They had a lot of plunder in their hand. They had Egypt's best fighting stuff. They had plundered that nation. And here they are marching out, and you could imagine the victory marches. You could imagine the chants. They've lined up in ranks. The swords are out. We're taking this by storm. Slaves for 400 years, these guys have been. Who do they think they are, right? And the imagery you have is when they left, they had plundered, and they are armed. They are the bad boys now heading into the land. They're tough. What's the Lord's concern? They didn't hear. Well, if he had taken them into a situation like that, they can't handle this for a second. And if he takes them by the way of the Philistines and they see those swords, you know what they're going to do? They're going to bolt back to Egypt. They're going to run back. It's too much for them. Can't handle it. So what does he do? Well, I was curious at this moment what other commentators said, and Calvin called this an amazing act of God's condescension and mercy to his people. We go through this life and we don't see why we're turned this way and that way. We don't see why we're going this way or that way. Some of us take turns. We have no idea why. And the Lord is telling us that he gives strange reroutes often, but not for the reason you think. This is where I think the commentators fell short. Not for the reasons you think. Not to make your life easier. I want to come back to that question, why is God rerouting? Before that's explained, two other things are emphasized as they're heading out. The first is, you'll notice this strange occurrence that the body of Joseph was picked up as they had headed out of Egypt. You'll read in verse 19, and Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for he had placed the children of Israel under solemn oath, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry my bones from here with you. You know the Egyptians and Joseph would have sat in the tomb of the kings in some way there in Egypt. They would have walked in there and plundered and taken back the body of Joseph, and the Egyptians were great for their embalming, you remember. I don't think we understand how significant this was. When Joseph died years ago, you remember what happened. The children were brought to him, and he gathered them all around the bed, and he never wanted them. It was prophetic. He wanted them to understand God's promise and wanted his body to be kept there. Remember, they drove Jacob's body back. Joseph said, not mine. Mine stays. And here's why I want it to stay. So God, he wanted them never to forget the promise made to Joseph that his body had to go back and be buried with the fathers because it would be raised one day. That body was to be a kind of token. That body was to be, as people would have been carrying it through the wilderness all those years, an abiding testimony of God's faithfulness to his promises to Joseph himself, great Joseph himself, the most Christ-like figure in the Old Testament, that he would bring them to the land. There goes a body. If they didn't make it, God would have failed in what he swore to Abraham. Then something absolutely glorious happens. That body was an encouragement. Then something glorious happens. God's presence comes down. Verse 21. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and night. He did not take the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people. An awesome thing happened at that moment. A massive pillar of cloud came down and led them by day, and then another kind of pillar by fire by night. And I don't know what the Israelites thought when they saw that, but God had continued to emphasize in this whole thing, I'm fulfilling what I swore to Abraham. And I got to go back there. What did God say to Abraham in Genesis 15? Listen to this. And it came to pass, when the sun went down and it was dark, that behold, there appeared a smoking oven and a burning torch that passed between those pieces. On the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, to your descendants I have given this land, from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates. Where was Abraham? Asleep. Silent. I want you to remember that. We're going to close out the sermon with that thought. God came through in two, sort of the legs of God. It was a glorious two column they call theophany of his presence. These two glorious blazing symbols of God's presence came down and passed through the row, split through the row, and God was telling Abraham, I will fulfill this covenant of grace to you. I have to. God was taking an oath, walking through, promise an oath, through those pieces to fulfill what he promised. Here we are. God's about to split the sea and walk right through again. The whole scene is being reenacted. It's a death-like event. His presence is going. His covenant of grace is being shown that he is intending to fulfill. But the Lord wanted them to think about the fact that he was with them through the whole thing. Whatever was about to come to pass, he's with them, he's guiding them, he's fulfilling everything that he promised. He's guiding, he's assuring, he's passing through, he's leading them down the safe path, so that the judgment won't touch one of them. Abraham, 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 I swore, I swore, I swore, drives this. The Shekinah glory shows up. The glory is there leading them. The Lord has displayed before the journey even begins his presence, fulfilling what he promised to Abraham, what he promised to Moses, I'll go with you. Joseph's body is there. I've got to bring my servant back. It's got to happen. Okay, that sets up everything. When you come to verse chapter 14, now we see this purpose unfolding. His presence is revealed. His purpose is now unfolding. Israel's going up for battle. He has rerouted them. All of a sudden, God does something now completely unexpected. Look at verse 1. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel that they turn and camp before Pi Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, opposite Baal Zephon. You shall encamp before it by the sea. Let me put this together, everything that's happened. They had traveled from Ramses to Succoth. The Lord on that path says, no. I'm not taking them that way. They're going to see the Philistines. They're going to see war. They will run back to Egypt. We're not going to go that way. So he stops and he reroutes them to go south by the way of the wilderness by the Red Sea. But now, the wilderness, you'll notice. But now in chapter 14, in verse 2, he turns them around and sends them back north to camp between Migdol, which was this mighty Egyptian fortress and tower, and the sea. Notice the Canaanite god is mentioned there, Baal Zephon. Put this together. God would not send them one way because they can't handle it, even though they're all equipped for battle. He takes them back, and then what does he do? A different route, and then he runs them back north. It's a giant kind of circle here. Does that sound safe? Nothing about this makes sense. They don't know this. Remember, you got 2 million people running. This can't be comfortable. Complete vulnerability, he just put them in a situation. If you're a military commander, you did the absolute worst thing you could do. I mean, it's worse than Custer's last stand. This is the worst thing. This is the bad choice. You are not leading your people right. You just placed your whole army, who has no ability to fight, in a position now they can't get out of. They can't run. He's backed them up against the Red Sea. Now remember, he said, they see the Philistines, they'll run. They're sheep for the slaughter. I mean, they are sheep for the slaughter. Why? Well, Pharaoh hears about this. It gets back into the courts that there are 2 million people of Israel mulling around, and the Pharaoh's officials are saying, these guys are idiots. Look at them out there. They can't even head out into the wilderness. They don't even know what they're doing. These Israelites are mulling around everywhere. They've gone up. They've gone back. They've gone over. They are confused. They're scared. They don't even know what to do. What just happened? Lord had just baited and hooked, didn't he? Now, it reminds you, Israel doesn't know this. You think they're starting to get a little frustrated? This makes no sense. this makes no sense. Verse 3, you get to the Lord's intentions. For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they're bewildered by the land. The wilderness has closed them in. Then I will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he will pursue them, and I will gain honor over Pharaoh and all his army, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. I'm going to harden one last time. I'm gaining glory. You watch. My glory will be shown. So Pharaoh hardens his heart. Their attitudes turn. 600 chariots he prepares. And they pursue Israel with vigor and force. What a drama. Backed up to the Red Sea. There they stand. No weapon. Well, they have weapons, but they don't know how to use them. They've never been taught warfare. They don't know how to fight the battle. Slaughter is waiting to happen. Enclosing them are Egypt's finest warriors, 600 chariots. That's like 600 of the U.S. best tanks coming at you. No one touched Egypt's chariots. The Psalms talk about horses and chariots all the time. Here come all of their mighty men. There's Pharaoh at the front. He did the Alexander the Great thing. He rode out in front. This is a nightmare. I mean, this is an absolute nightmare. You ever thought of the perplexity of this? They thought they were ready for battle. The Lord knows they couldn't handle seeing any war, right? He said that. They can't handle war. They'll run. So he puts them then in the absolute worst kind of situation, having to face a worse army, now backed up against the sea so that they can't run. You see what God's done to them? Backed, surrounded, nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. That is a situation they cannot bear. He had just said they can't handle the Philistines. How are they going to handle this? I hear commonly 1 Corinthians 10 somewhat abused when say, well, God will never give us more than we can bear. I hear that so commonly said, and we really have not read that correctly. We have not read that correctly at all. God will put you in situations you can't bear, but he's promised to provide an escape. I mean, you're in situations you can't bear all the time. You can't fight this battle. They're in a situation they can't bear. And that's what he wanted. That's what he was after. That's what he was pursuing. Well, what do you do? What's your response? What was Israel's? Verse 10, when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we might serve the Egyptians? For it, I mean, this is just unbelievable, right? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. Serve, worship. Here comes all the chariots. Everything's falling apart. They have nowhere to go. They cry out to the Lord. What does Moses do? Do not be afraid. Stand still. Stand firm. And see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians who you see today, you shall see again no more forever. The Lord will fight for you. Only hold your peace.
Listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Call us toll-free at 888-504-8805. That's 888-504-8805. Contact us through the web at agradio.org. That's agradio.org. We're on Facebook. Look for Abounding Grace Radio Ministry. Listen daily on this station and subscribe in iTunes or use our free Android app. We trust this program has encouraged you to trust in Christ for your standing with God and to live in His abounding grace.